2 of David Barsamian's conversation with historian and journalist Vijay Prashad, author of The Poorer Nations, A Possible History of the Global South. At 10 on Flashpoints, Dennis Bernstein looks at the narco-dictatorship in Honduras. At 11 on Stage and Studio, D.M.A. Roberts presents The People, Definition of Resilience by Indigify. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, Joseph Galavan interviews public artist Ed Carpenter about the Barbara Walker Crossing. Don't forget that you can hear all of these programs after they air on KBOO.fm or iTunes and Google Play. And if you want a third way to listen to all your favorite KBOO programming, then download our mobile app today. KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Dia de los Muertos on Wednesday, October 30th from 4 to 9 p.m. at Irving Street Studio in Portland. Educata Ya hosts Dia de los Muertos featuring decorative altars, people dressed up as Katrinas, reading of the satirical Calaveras, and a traditional Pan de Muerto. Again, that's Dia de los Muertos on Wednesday, October 30th from 4 to 9 p.m. at Irving Street Studios, 721 Northwest 9th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring a public affairs director to manage public affairs programming, ensuring that it is of the highest quality and consistent with the KBOO programming charter. For this 32 hours position, we are looking for someone with production experience, experience in community radio, who has communication and training skills, and the ability to work independently in a fast-paced work environment. KBOO Community Radio is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. Women and people of color are encouraged to apply. Deadline to apply is Friday, October 25th at 5 p.m. More information can be found at kboo.fm/PADHire2019.
KBOO Community Radio is having our annual book and record sale on November 23rd, 2019 to raise funds with support from the Willamette Week Give Guide. The sale will be located at Lagunitas Portland Community Room at 237 Northeast Broadway from 12 p.m. until 9 p.m. From classic books to coffee table books to cookbooks, treasures will be waiting for your discovery and just in time for the holidays. Enjoy community music, activities, and a live broadcast from KBOO at the event. Proceeds from the sales will support the station's operations. Right now, KBOO is accepting used books and records in good condition. Now through Friday, November 15th, listeners, members, and supporters can drop off donations during business hours at the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. After hours, appointments can be made available. For more information, please call 503-231-8032 or go online to kboo.fm.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and on the web at kboo.fm.
Hey, good morning. Good morning. My name is Abe Proctor. You are tuned into the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM, your community supported radio station. It's just me this morning. My illustrious co-host Joe had something come up this morning. It prevented him from being here. We miss you, Joe. We look forward to having you back next week. So, a little glimpse behind the curtain here at the Abe and Joe Show. Typically, there is a bit of a division of labor that happens from week to week on the show. One of us will have an idea about what we want to focus the conversation on. The other one will usually disagree. There's a little bit of an argument, and then we decide on which direction we're going to go. This morning, Joe was going to lead the conversation, but as I mentioned, he was unable to be here, which leaves me in a position not unlike, well, I'm sure there's some appropriate metaphor out there, but it's not coming to mind. But here I am, without a co-host, trying to decide what to talk about with all you beautiful listeners. I have a pretty good idea, though, but I'm hoping that you guys will contribute a significant amount to today's discussion. And here's why. I would like to hear from you today. I have some thoughts on this as well. If things were to work out over the next year and a half or so in the best possible way, I'm talking about the election that's pending next year. I'm talking about the subsequent winner of that presidential election and of the congressional elections. So I want to hear from you how, if you had your wish, and I realize that's a very, very broad entreaty to this particular listenership, but if you had your fondest desire going forward next year, how would you like to see things play out? But beyond that, I'm willing to hear your pipe dreams, too. You know, a third-party candidate swoops in from out of nowhere, galvanizes the hearts and minds of a nation, presides over an unprecedented shift in consciousness on a massive scale, and delivers us all into a period of enlightenment. All right, that's one possible outcome, yes. Not a very likely one, but it's there. And if you want to talk about something like that, that's fine. But I'm more interested in hearing how you really hope that we will be able to find our way out of the mess we currently find ourselves in. And in doing so, in ushering in this topic of conversation, I want to lift the lid on something that we have up to this point kept tightly sealed up, and that is rampant speculation on the presidential race that is now underway, despite the fact that we are more than a year away from the general election of 2020. So that's what I want to hear from you this morning. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. I imagine that in whatever scenarios are running through your fevered leftist minds, that the impeachment of the president will come to bear on that in some way, shape, or form. To put a little context on that particular question, I want to refer to you to my friend Tyler writes in to say that in his perfect set of outcomes, Detroit Rock City by the eminent rock band Kiss becomes the new national anthem. Tyler, I can get behind that particular proposition. So I want to direct you to the words of our illustrious president himself, who took to Twitter some 3 hours ago to write the following. So someday, he whines, if a Democrat becomes president and the Republicans win the House, even by a tiny margin, they can impeach the president without due process or fairness or any legal rights. All Republicans must remember what they are witnessing here, a lynching. But we will win. I want to go out on a limb here and suggest that the choice of the word lynching is perhaps not the best choice on the president's part. Beyond that, he's true. Yes, the House can impeach the president, even by a tiny margin, and without due process or any legal rights, because impeachment, as we all know, is not a legal process, but a constitutional one with different standards of evidence. Oh, well, I'm not going to go down that path. Let's go to you, our listeners. Edie, good morning. You're first up.
Hi. Before I heard you saying you're going to be talking about impeachment, I thought you were opening up for us to mention things, and I wanted folks
yes.
to call in to city council members, including the mayor, and thank them for deciding to, and thank the permitting office for deciding to deny Zenith tar sand oil train to ship terminal the permission to have pipes under Northwest Front Street. To ship crude that would block all the useful business that has to be there and endanger everyone so much worse. So thank you. They made one positive decision, and we can maybe encourage them so they'll continue making more. And those people who are privileged enough to to be able to show up next Wednesday in time for the 9:30 city council meeting wearing red to say that we want them to stick with their fancy words of the proposal to have a resolution to have no new fossil fuel infrastructure and put real teeth into it, to real city ordinances and regulations and policies. So those are two things that we can do to help us better. And as we have the local folks gain control over their own safety and health, then the big national and international fossil fuel industry won't be able to destroy us. Oregon is a thin green line between Alberta tar sands and the Bakken oil fields and the Asian markets. So let's just stop it down in Portland and Vancouver. We can do it.
So you're saying acting locally is the best way to promote our interests, and then by doing so, it will help bring the national and international situation in line.
I think we have to do both. Hmm. I think we need to have international and national solidarity with some cohesive values and intelligence and information and resources, but also having spokes councils and affinity groups and local direct action as appropriate for each place. I want real democracy.
I can't argue with any of that. So red, you're encouraging people to wear red to symbolize opposition to new fossil fuel infrastructure. Tell us again about the upcoming meeting, when and where it is, please.
Next, every Wednesday, we typically have city council meetings starting at 9:30 at Southwest 4th and Madison. And sometimes we like people to show up wearing a particular color in solidarity. Red for stopping the train, red for emergency, red for stop sign. Red is the international color in resistance to fossil fuel and nuclear power.
Well, excellent. I love it. I think acting locally is a huge part of the recipe for extricating
And for those
ourselves.
Of you who cannot take time off or get in there, certainly emailing and calling in. You're not going to have a lot of time to talk on the phone. They probably just kind of put you in the yes or no camp. But you can certainly email. You can certainly do a quick phone call.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Appreciate the call. And the optimistic outlook. I appreciate that as well. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program on KBOO. It's just me in the chair today talking with you about how you would like to see the next 18 to 24 months unfold. What is your best case scenario? If you're not able to get to a telephone, you can write to us at the Facebook page, Abe and Joe, facebook.com/Abe and Joe. You can also send us a tweet at HonestAbe72. Let's go back to the phones. Mike, good morning.
Morning. How are you doing?
I'm hanging in. How are you?
Well, I'm not quite as optimistic as Edie there. You know, I'm a 71-year-old white man. I played guitar most of my life in bands and stuff. Okay, I see three things here. First, it's going to take us. We've got the media that is owned by the rich people. We've got the judiciary that seems to be messed up bad. The problem is it's going to take 20 years or so to clean up the mess. Even if we get Bernie elected or somebody, the Democrat elected, it's going to take 20 years to clean up the mess.
You're probably right about that.
Yeah, okay. And, you know, we've got to deal. You know, I don't understand, you know, how he's going to do it. But people say, these other candidates say it's going to take money and nothing comes for free. Well, if they spent half the money they spent just on the politics alone, I mean, why are we spending 2 years of every cycle on all this massive money? We've got to get the money out of the campaigns, get equal time. That's going to need to be cleaned up. You know, we're running out of time on climate. What are we going to do about that? So if we don't get a Democrat in there, we're toast. We're really down the tubes.
Yeah,
or
Bernie. I tend to agree, but at the same time, not many of that slate of candidates is particularly inspiring, nor do they offer much in the way of hope for the sort of radical structural change that we need. Not all of them, but most of them.
Well, the money, you know, the thing of it is, the money's there. It's just we're spending it all on the wrong stuff.
You're right. You know? It really comes down to a question of priorities, doesn't it? About the climate, yeah. About just about everything.
Yeah.
Priorities.
So it's going to take years to clean up the mess, even if best case scenario, the mess that's been created here by these rich elites and this, you know, Facebook and Amazon. What are we going to do about that nightmare? You know, people don't seem to understand. They're not looking at their history. What they did to Hillary, they did to John Kerry. Do you remember when they did that?
Oh, I remember, yes.
If people don't remember that, why don't you take a minute and tell them about that?
That's a good idea. Hey, listen, thank you very much for the call.
You bet, partner.
All right. What Mike was referencing there is the tendency amongst the political opposition on the right to really pull no punches when it comes to smearing the character and record and everything else about whichever candidate happens to be opposing them in a presidential race. It came down to John Kerry. John Kerry, of course, who served multiple tours of duty in Vietnam, was wounded three times, won three separate Purple Heart awards for that, but nevertheless was roundly criticized in the public sphere for having faked at least one of those injuries in order to come up with a fake Purple Heart. So be that as it may, that's a pretty underhanded way to campaign. And I think the object lesson we should all draw from that as liberals is that Kerry responded to that smear in exactly the wrong way. He really didn't really respond much at all and allowed that blow to land, allowed it to go unanswered. And subsequently, he appeared weak and ineffectual in front of the electorate. When instead he should have said, well, you know what? I bled for each one of those Purple Hearts wearing the uniform of my country, and if President Bush would care to lay down his military record next to mine, I would be happy to compare the two. That's the sort of response that he should have given. And really, it's that sort of, frankly, combative political spirit that I hope typifies whoever wins the nomination on the Democratic side this next time out. Because as Mike pointed out, and I'm sure many of you will agree with me, that whether we like it or not, our hopes rest with whoever is the Democratic nominee next year. I mentioned a moment ago how Donald Trump this morning tweeted that the impeachment inquiry that right now is looking into his deeds was the modern-day equivalent of a lynching. Senator Lindsey Graham, that paragon of virtue, that clear-eyed viewer of history, defended that today. This is a quote. I think that's pretty well accurate, Senator Graham said. This is a sham. This is a joke. So, yeah, this is a lynching. And in every sense, this is un-American. Yes. So having an investigation of President Trump's transgressions and his crimes, not only against the office, but against the law, is exactly like the horrific process of taking an African-American, almost always a man, and stringing him up from the tree in the town square while the white citizens came and held a picnic. They are exactly equivalent. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Sean, good morning. What's on your mind?
Good morning, Abe. Hey, I think the corporate Democrats have finally overplayed their hand. You have like the limousine liberal centrists sitting on top of their real estate holdings and their 401ks and their stock portfolios, and they're best represented, of course, by Hillary Clinton. And I think they finally crossed the boundary. Hillary, not ambiguously, she literally came out and accused Tulsi Gabbard of being a Russian asset. And so what I'm hoping for the next 24 months is that the party of the people, the party of the working class, the poor, the labor unions, will be wrested from these limousine liberal corporate Democrat, Democratic Leadership Council folks, that once and for all, these people have overplayed their hand. They're going to be resigned to the dustbin of history, and we're going to have either a Tulsi Sanders ticket or a Sanders Gabbard ticket. And we're going to have a Green New Deal, and it's going to be, you know, basically like the FDR period, but on steroids. So that's the hope I'm holding out for the next 24 months is that, you know, I shouldn't say any more because my contempt for the people who've controlled the Democratic Party really since Bill Clinton is pretty much boundless. So I'll just stop there. Thanks, Abe.
Yeah, I understand. I confess. Thank you for the call. Yeah, I confess. I took note of that accusation being leveled by Secretary Clinton towards Representative Gabbard, accusing Gabbard of being a Russian asset. I confess that I don't know. I don't know the details or the context there. I don't know on what grounds that accusation is being leveled. So I frankly can't either confirm or refute it. Let's go back to the phones. Pear, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Well, I think I would go along with what Sean just said. I think that the optimum, you know, the best outcome would be for Trump to be impeached for something worthwhile, like dumping the Paris Climate Agreement. He would be impeached for that and also the nuclear agreement with Iran. And throw in the emoluments clause. Impeach him for those things. And that he would be out of office and Sanders would win. And the Democrats would open up the Green New Deal. And there's lots of money in the military budget. The military budget officially is something like $750 billion. But if you add in all the little extras and hidden funds and everything, it probably comes to close to $1 trillion available. We also have 800 bases around the world. We don't need them. I think that the United States has got a lot of fixing to do. You know, we've got a very flawed democracy. And look who's in the White House now. And I think that would be my best case that the United States decides, hey, we need to make this a decent country, and we've got the money and we've got the brains to do it, and let's go ahead and do it. That's my best case scenario, but well, who knows? My worst case scenario is something a bit different, but there you go.
Let me ask you, do you think, presuming that Senator Sanders wins the Democratic nomination, I think, which is an open question at this point, do you think he would be able to prevail in the general election?
Oh, I hope so. Well, in my best, well, if Trump gets impeached, see, could Trump run again? That would be something, wouldn't it? If Trump gets impeached and then the Republicans decide to run him again, that'd be an interesting thing. I don't know. I think he could. Sure.
Sure.
I think the country is changing. You know, people are realizing, hey, you know, the country is going down the tubes. We've got all this money for the military budget. We got all these bases that we, you know, we keep pushing for war. That's what the Hillary crowd wants to do. So anyway, that's I think he could win, or Elizabeth Warren.
Hmm.
That's
all right.
Possible. That's my best case, but don't ask me about my worst case.
Hey, thank you for the call, Perry. Appreciate it. Hey. All right, this is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Program, and it's now truly the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Program, because look who walked in the door.
Hey, you know, I hate to admit this, but my keys fell out of my hand when I was rushing into the house last night. It was dark, and the leaves covered it. Finally, I thought to rake them, and there it was. So I apologize for being late.
Oh, it's quite all right. I'm glad you made it. I'm glad you found your keys. I'm glad you're mobile again.
I'm mobile, and I don't think I'll do the thing I was going to do. I'll do it next week.
Okay, that sounds good. You probably know what we're doing.
Yeah, right? No, I listened the whole time.
All right.
And I have to say one thing really important. We don't have a party system in America. We have two establishment parties, and that's the root of the problem we're seeing right now. It's actually the root. The fact that we have a fascist in the White House is just a simple example of the failure of the media. This guy wouldn't even be anywhere if NBC, National Broadcasting Company, hadn't turned him into a phony executive hero, when in fact he's a thief and a criminal and has always been that. I gotta say that. I mean, it's just insane. And it shows you the absolute paucity of of modern monopoly capital.
Yeah. I can't contest any of that.
Well, that's sad, isn't it?
I want to mention something that Pear just commented on during his call. and that is the prospect of a Bernie Sanders candidacy in the general election. Now, this is something I keep coming back to, and I know that we have sworn off talking about this till
next year. My heart.
I know, but we blew the lid off that today. Shortly after President Trump's victory in 2016, a guy by the name of Kurt Eichenwald, journalist with Newsweek, wrote a column. This was pretty much a hot take because it was right after the election. So he was angry, talking about why the Democrats lost. And he came to a section about a section that he characterizes as the myth that Sanders would have prevailed in that election. And he talks about an opportunity he had during the campaign to view a dossier of GOP opposition research that they had compiled on Bernie Sanders. And you can find this column. It's still out there. If you Google Eichenwald Bernie dossier, you will find it. And he goes into some detail about the contents of that dossier and posits that there's no way that Bernie would win a general election campaign after all that stuff came out.
Is this about leftism?
This is about leftism, about Bernie's past, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he was a progressive kind of guy, and he's old enough to have been involved in many, I would say, positive efforts to change the United States. So he's, you know, he's vulnerable in that sense.
Yeah, well, he also did a bunch of stuff, according to this dossier, that when plastered in a campaign ad is going to make him look pretty bad in the eyes of a broad swath of the electorate who might otherwise be inclined to support a Democratic candidate.
I think that the opposition research thing has gained an enormous significance in our politics, way beyond what it ever was, except the last time that this happened at this level was probably when Al Flanden ran, and when, in fact, the guy was smeared for being a Catholic. That one was killed by Kennedy, thank goodness. But basically, our public is very easily moved in what I would call negative populist ways. And right now, that populism is thriving. And the Democrats are spending an enormous amount of time trying to choose among several very good candidates, most of whom want to have positive changes. But the question is the degree of change. Will they take a risk on making healthcare a public thing, which it is in everywhere else in the world, except not quite. For example, in Holland, it's actually private insurance in connection to jobs and the public. And it's a very different model. In England, the model is a national healthcare system. So there's a lot of ways to deliver healthcare.
Switzerland has a mixed system as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, all these things, though, are dependent on a knowledgeable voting public, which has never been a part of our tradition.
Never been a strong suit here?
Well, no. I mean, look at the elections. I just study all elections of the President of the United States just to look at one thing. They've always been nonsense. There was one candidate, I think Harrison, who had a large rubber ball that people would move from town to town. They say, keep the ball rolling. That was the campaign. And there was, I think it was Harrison, Tippy Canoe and Tyler, too.
Tyler, too, yeah.
I mean, come on. Low intellectual level, low consciousness, all of it mostly not about what was really going on.
I want to quote from this Eichenwald column.
Wait a minute. Is this the stuff, the bad stuff?
Yeah, the opposition research on Sanders.
Okay. I don't like it, but okay.
Well, okay. The Republicans had a video of Sanders at a 1985 rally thrown by the leftist Sandinista government in Nicaragua, where 500,000 people chanted, here, there, everywhere, the Yankee will die. While President Daniel Ortega condemned state terrorism by America, Sanders said on camera that supporting the Sandinistas was, quote, patriotic. Now, you could dissect this, right, and dig into it on any number of levels and come up, I think, with a pretty cogent explanation as to why this really doesn't matter now. But I think in the eyes of a large swath of the electorate, that's going to look really, really bad for Bernie.
Well, I think that, you know, Sanders comes out of a new age, I'll say that, new age progressivism that had great legitimacy and is still valid. The fact that one leader yells a chant and that Bernie's in the same rally is less significant than the fact that the United States manipulated things in Nicaragua to the point where now Nicaragua is the slave state of the United States.
Yeah, I completely agree. But do you think the electorate is ready to dig down to that level of granular detail and that level of analysis?
No.
I really don't think they are.
No, I think the American electorate, and I'm going to have to say this, is incredibly naive. And it's been manipulated into being naive.
Indeed, particularly the conservative part of the American electorate. Look, consider all they needed for recalcitrant opposition to the Hillary Clinton campaign. All they needed was the non-issue of her emails.
Right.
That's all they needed. And all the baggage, of course, that she had accumulated over years of proximity to power. But they don't need a whole lot. All they needed against John Kerry was that silly, you cheated and didn't really win a Purple Heart argument.
Well, and beyond that, you weren't really a hero. You didn't really go up the Mekong in a little boat and fight the
Right, you didn't
Viet
do
Kong.
Any of these things. You're a dandy who likes to windsurf instead of play touch football. That's all the stuff they need, right?
Well, I agree.
So, if given that low bar for entrenched opposition, this is going to be a gold mine.
Oh,
what I'm saying to you right now is I really like Bernie. I've supported Bernie in the past, but I think Bernie Sanders' general election campaign is fraught with peril, is what I'm saying to you.
Well, I think it's fraught with peril for another reason, which is America's prejudice against people who've ever had a heart attack. Remember when Eisenhower,
yes.
You won't remember this because you're too young. When Eisenhower had a heart attack, the establishment, the loose publications, Time and Life and so on, they went to incredible trouble to explain heart attacks and explain how nowadays you can survive them and it doesn't really matter. They went to such an extent that it was useful for people to understand you could survive a heart attack and to begin to think about their diet and think about survival instead of thinking about death. And that was, that in a way, that was a good thing. And Eisenhower, looking back on it, turned out to be one of the more important figures in warning against the military-industrial complex.
He was a liberal by today's standards.
By any standards.
Yep.
Richard Nixon was a liberal.
That's absolutely right. Something else from this Eichenwald column. Okay, Sanders co-sponsored a bill to ship Vermont's nuclear waste to a poor Hispanic community in Texas where it could be dumped. You can just see the words environmental racist on Republican billboards. And if you can't, this is Eichenwald writing, I already did. They were in the Republican opposition research book as a proposal on how to frame the nuclear waste issue. Fraught with peril, a Sanders candidacy.
Well, here's the thing. There are very, very few anybody's running in politics who have not made compromises to get where they get. It's the nature of the system. And in fact, I can't imagine, I don't know enough this is more honest, I don't know enough to predict Klobuchar, blah, 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 mm-hmm. and what would be the attacks against them. The reality of the politics of today is that you have a large base of neo-fascist mindset. Remember that the Civil War was very unpopular. The Civil War, unpopular. Yeah. Remember that, in fact, racism is endemic to the culture.
Indeed.
And when you start looking at things like this, there have been many so-called populists, and it's a funny word because it's often used about the right and the left. There are many populists who absolutely believe that you can't even elect a lefty person. Meanwhile, the smartest amongst them, Elizabeth Warren, says she has a plan for that. But what she wants to do about health care and what Bernie wants to do, which is very similar, will not fly in this society when your opponent is, in fact, the health industrial complex. They will spend as much money as they need to keep a candidate who wants to nationalize health care. That will make a big difference.
That's absolutely true.
And if you go for the, you think, okay, well, I can't remember his name, the little mayor,
Buttigieg.
Buttigieg, yes. Well, okay, here's where it gets really nasty. He's an out gay guy.
Yep.
And they will not hesitate to run an underground, not above ground, campaign to smear the hell out of him for his sexual orientation.
Yeah, indeed. Buttigieg is a very smart dude.
Oh, yeah.
But he's also willing to take money from the crowd of usual suspects.
Well,
and it's very interesting. A lot of people, when he first entered the race, said, God, what a young, smart, articulate dude. Uh-huh. And they projected, as liberals have a tendency to do, their fondest hopes upon him. But out of the gate, he didn't really have much of a policy proposal on anything. But it's been interesting to watch this evolve, and I've been paying attention to this. As he has taken money from big dollar donors over the course of this campaign, you have seen his policy positions become more detailed and more aligned with the traditional corporate-friendly model of the milquetoast left-of-center Democrats.
Yeah.
That we've seen in past decades.
Well, I assume that if the Democrats haven't totally lost their mind, and this is not about what I want, but what needs to be done, there will have to be that phenomenon. It isn't necessarily him, because I think America is still an extremely prejudiced country. And one of the prejudices lying buried within the filthy darkness of our politics is homophobia.
Indeed. All right, let's put a pin in that, take care of a little business, then we'll go back to the phones. All right?
Okay.
All right.
But you brought up this topic. It's a dark topic, I got to say.
Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 on Alternative Radio, it's part two of David Barsamian's conversation with historian and journalist Vijay Prashad, author of The Poorer Nations, A Possible History of the Global South. At 10 on Flashpoints, Dennis Bernstein looks at the narco dictatorship in Honduras. At 11, Stage and Studio, D.May Roberts presents The People, Definition of Resilience by Indignify. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, Joseph Galaban interviews public artist Ed Carpenter about the Barbara Walker, it says Rossing here, but I'm thinking that means crossing.
Yes, right. It is a crossing.
Not a Rossing, a crossing. All this and more coming up today on KBOO.
All right. Yeah, I think we should go to the phone.
We should. Robbie, good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you two?
Very well. What's on your mind?
So I wanted to say, first of all, you're asking if Bernie Sanders is electable. Of course he is. Why do you think they have to do the blackout for him? You know, this whole, the media charade, literally shunting him down. Second of all, that whole article that says, some Republican looked into him. I've heard all those arguments. Do you think that they're not already trying to do those ones? Because they get diminished right away. Third of all, you're talking about John Kerry and how they smeared him for some lie, which he actually did lie about. I need to bring up, did you remember George Bush and John Kerry were both part of Skull and Bones? Remember that fraternity?
Yep.
So they're all
from it's not a fraternity. It's more exclusive than a fraternity.
Okay, sure. They classify it as a fraternity, but you know as well as I know, that's the cabal elite. That is the money that Sanders is going after. Fourth of all, I talked to many, many different people on left and right, not just, I talked to Republicans. Do you know how many Republicans would vote for Bernie Sanders? The fact that we're out here saying he's not electable, I think is naivety on your end, because personally, they wouldn't have to try so hard if they didn't. And then I'll end with this here. But Elizabeth Warren, here's the thing. We're talking about the people who lie, right? This is one thing that Sanders is not doing. He has not lied about stuff. You know, you want to try to find, like the nuclear waste thing that they're, that they can try to smear on him. Like here's the fact, though. Elizabeth Warren has been caught lying twice now about trying to gain for personal gain, whether it's about whether she was fired from a job or whether she was, fired for being pregnant or whether or not she quit, which was what she was quoted saying in an interview. That's for personal gain. The whole thing about the Native American, she claiming that she did that for a college scholarship. Now, when you look at these candidates, I'm only looking at the facts and like what they're bringing up. Bernie doesn't lie. And I can't trust any other candidate. He is the only hope. And I find it sad that we have to go into this ring about being like, is he electable? That's why he's winning all the polls. Are you kidding?
He's Donald not winning. Trump he's not winning Sanders? All the polls.
He is. Bernie. No. Compared against Trump.
Okay,
Trump.
That's fine. Yeah.
Against Trump, no. I could win. Come on.
Okay, I want to clarify my position here.
No, but compared to the other Democratic candidates, he's beating Trump by a large margin. That's because Republicans are looking for that truth. Whenever we hear Warren speak, I can't trust it. I hear these stories that are trying to like make people feel like heartworms, and I don't get the policies. Bernie Sanders doesn't bring up personal stories. He brings up stuff that people need. And the fact of the matter is that it's only white liberals supporting Warren right now. And that's sad, because when you look at who's going to take on white supremacy, which he declared Warren, when you look at taking out the three people, he called them out, three individuals. He said those three people own more wealth than the bottom 50%. Elizabeth Warren calls a monopolist. Who do you think's actually going to go after it? And here's the thing. He gets stuff done because he knows how to work across the aisle. As you said, if he had to make some deal to ship nuclear waste somewhere, you know what? I bet you that's what got him to where he's now. And, you know, so it's I think it's the naivety's on you and the Democratic Party, because they've had to rig the election to make sure that Bernie Sanders doesn't get it. So when it comes down to this, I hope in the next 24 months, I hope that Bernie Sanders ditches the Democratic Party, and that the progressive base, which is the majority of the base, ditches the Democrats as well. Because for Elizabeth Warren. Anyway, I'll leave it there.
Thank you for the call. I want to clarify my position here. It's not that I think that Sanders can't win a general election campaign.
Well, I think he can win.
I think he could win, too. What I'm saying is it's going to be a lot dicier, I think, than those polls suggest. Well, here's the reason why. Sanders has never had to face the full fury of a conservative opposition research campaign over the course of a general election. That's what I'm saying.
Well, look, this is an interesting kind of conversation. The fact of the matter is that if the present criminal president continues on the same path he's on, and if the attempt to get rid of him is even marginally successful, that is, he's impeached at the level of the House of Representatives but blocked in the Senate, the fact of the matter is that a large part of the establishment will do whatever it takes, and that means a lot, to defeat Bernie Sanders, because they're afraid of having a social Democrat in the White House. They're really afraid of it. Elizabeth Warren, also, they're very afraid of. The situation is very dire, has always been bad in American politics. The last time we had somebody who made real, significant liberal reform would have been Johnson on the issue of race relations in the South, And the last time we had a president who actually created a system which had potential for economic and social justice was actually Franklin Delano Roosevelt. We are a fundamentally conservative, reactionary society that maintains itself on weird mythos. And this has always been the case. And even though we have a good, strong constitution in many ways, we do not have a way to block lies. We do not have a way to create a realistic process for selecting candidates and then for running them. It's just not there.
No, you're absolutely correct.
So you know, I don't know. Well, if the effort to get rid of Trump is successful, and I think it actually might be, because he is such a creepy criminal. Everything from real sex crimes to real money crimes, you know, to things that have cost people their lives, which is what he just did in
Syria.
Syria. You know, the fact of the matter is that a lot of people are angry. They're angry at the base, and they're angry for reasons which are either real or not real. They feel aggrieved, and Trump really knows how to stroke that, and really knows how to bring it up. And he has been encouraged by media, now not so much, but in his history, mm-hmm. in his growth history as a popular figure, he has been really encouraged, and he now occupies this weird position where the vast majority of people who really don't care about politics, they don't know much about politics, they have very simple ideas, I'm afraid. I have to say this. It's not that people are IQ stupid. It's that they are educated stupid.
They're ignorant.
They are made to believe things that are never true. I went through the public school system. I learned so many lies in public school, or so many oversimplifications. And, you know, I was lucky. I happen to be a person who read a lot. I happen to know people who were of a different opinion. But I'm a mm-hmm. weird guy. I don't count in this.
Yeah.
And you don't either.
I'm a weird guy too.
Well, you're less weird than I am. I claim weirdness is my mantra.
Okay.
I can't run for office though, because I'm too weird.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Same for you.
Yeah, too weird. So the last caller, that was a great call, by the way. Obviously a staunch supporter of Bernie Sanders. I respect that. The claim though that the caller made, that Elizabeth Warren is somehow insincere about her desire to truly go after the moneyed class. I would dispute that point, and I offer into evidence the fact that Mark Zuckerberg, about a week and a half ago, you know who he is, right?
Yeah.
The CEO of Facebook,
The guy will allow lies the most vicious sort on his network, as it were.
Right. Publicly stated that he saw Elizabeth Warren as a fundamental threat to his position and his fortune.
Right.
And committed himself to opposing her. That is evidence enough to suggest that perhaps Warren's proposal of a wealth tax, a very, very modest wealth tax, I might add, is enough to scare the moneyed class.
Yeah.
But I suppose we shall see. All right. Jack writes in to the show to say, a popular story is told about Adlai Stevenson when he was running for president in 1952 or 56. Someone heard Stevenson's impressive speech and said, every thinking person in America will be voting for you. Stevenson replied, I'm afraid that won't do. I need a majority.
Right. Well, he's a wise guy, intellectual, and he had a hole in his shoe.
Right. Let's go to the phones. Ralph, good morning.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Okay, I'm going to make two predictions, and then I want to talk a little bit about Michael Moore's new documentary coming out.
I love Michael Moore. Don't insult Michael Moore.
I don't think the Democrats are not going to formally vote for impeachment, but that's not going to be to their advantage. They're just going to try to drag this out as much as possible in a bit of a charade. That's my first prediction. Second prediction is I don't think any Democrat is going to get enough of a majority, and that they'll take it into the convention, and there'll be a completely different person that will be nominated as the candidate. I think that's the plan that they have, and so they want to make sure that everybody gets dirtied up.
I have a real question. I can't make a prediction like that. How do you come up with that specific prediction?
Well, because none of these candidates are let's go back to the saying. I don't know who said it, but if elections made a difference, it'd be illegal. America is basically oligarchy in the disguise of a democracy, different powers, different people behind the scenes. Throwing their weight around, and then they'll come up with a scenario. So the current theme is a pro wrestling theme. I mean, Trump is the absolute perfect villain. You either love him or hate him, which is how pro wrestling works. And now we have all these challengers.
But pro wrestling is scripted. You know that.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying. The embedded infrastructure of, like you were just saying, Eisenhower, the military, the banking, when they can just print money out of thin air, give it to their buddies, and make it look like the economy's doing something when it's actually all it's doing is piling on debt. It's all an illusion. So that's my prediction. Now, one thing you keep talking about is, this green energy. We got to save the planet. And I could argue all day with you why CO2 is not our biggest environmental problem.
We don't have all day though. Can you sum it up?
School you, educate you for a couple of hours to bring you up to speed on why that isn't a problem. But Michael Moore started looking into alternative energies. And he's found that, to his chagrin, it's actually one of the most wasteful things that we could be doing. For example, if we were to meet the 2050 Paris Accords with solar power, it would take twice as much. The amount of materials you would produce would be twice as much as the current amount of plastic that we're producing. An electric car battery requires extracting and processing more than 500,000 pounds of raw materials. And, this goes on and on and on. This is all just another scam by the industrialists to create a new set of capitalism, and they want to have us pay for it with a carbon tax. So, I'm all for moving forward with technology. I don't think we should stay in the dark ages. We need to find things, but I think we need to be pragmatic about it. The price of electricity in Germany now is causing people to choose between heat or food.
No, no. I know a lot of people in Germany. No one is having to choose between heat and food, man. It's not true.
Oh, yeah. You know a lot of people in Germany.
Yeah. I really do. I have family in Germany.
All right. I think we're going to leave it there. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it.
I get really annoyed at that kind of a statement, though, where it is not, it's based on a general kind of misinformation. There may be people in Germany who are poor. That's no big argument. But the fact of the matter is that actually, in terms of fundamental services, the German people are more secure than the many, many people, many people who are poor in this country.
It's similar to that argument that goes, well, you talk about Canada's healthcare system, but I know some grandma had to wait 2 years for a hip replacement.
Exactly.
It's that sort of.
Well, and no system has no flaws, okay? Any system created by human beings will have places in it which are weak, which need help, which need work. The fact of the matter is that our system of healthcare, for example, is incredibly cruel and unnecessarily so. And I have had to deal with that system in my life, so I know it firsthand, and I understand why it is the way it is and how it is the way it is. I got a cop a plea here. I spent almost 3 years in studying medical sociology, so I'm not talking out of the top of my head.
Right, or elsewhere.
All right. I'm not out of the lower area either.
All right, Jet7 writes to the Twitter machine. We're at HonestAbe72 if you want to hop on the Twitter machine. Jet writes, please listen. 3 days after I spent my savings to pay off a student loan, I got laid off. There are no resources for people under 55 with non-human kids in Portland. No wonder so many are homeless. Hardesty says there is help, but no, there is none. Thank you.
Well, he would know.
Yeah. Well,
I'm not in that situation. Yeah. So I can't even argue about it.
I'm sorry you lost your job. I really hope you can find another one. You're right. You're right that there is not enough support there for people who find themselves out of work.
And there ought to be.
There really ought to be. Yeah.
You know. I mean, this is important. What we really need to understand is that, first of all, social democracies work. Second of all, they are not perfect, but they work. And they are not capitalist. That is, they are very much states where money talks and everything else walks. And they're far from perfect, but in terms of the basics, they are much better. We have a homeless population which is largely ignored. Actually, New York Times spent a long time writing about it, today's paper, which is largely ignored and which is apparently not going to be solved anytime soon by either political party. I mean, and the question of the mentally ill and the question of the physically impaired and so on. We are not a kind society. We have never been a kind society.
No.
And there was that brief period of time because of the Depression when there was an effort to make things more equitable. And, of course, we'll never know whether that would have on its own worked because all of that was changed by World War II, which kicked us into high gear and created the current military-industrial complex.
Yeah, this is true. But some of that commitment to equity persisted. Broadly, for the white working class, folks of color were largely left out.
Yeah.
Even during the New Deal, this was true.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, black people were not in any much better situation, particularly in the rural areas of the South.
Yeah, but the seed that was planted by the New Deal and which persisted in the post-war decades was one that said government can largely be a positive and activist force in the lives of people.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, I think, been eviscerated since the beginning of the Reagan age. And here we are where we are now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where a lot of people, a significant chunk of the electorate, thinks that government can do no good for you and should be drowned in the bathtub, in the words of Grover Norquist, and that really the best thing we ought to do is turn things over to the unfettered whims of the free market. But I think we have some idea of how that would turn out, don't we?
I have.
Yes. Let's go back to the phones. Harry, you're next.
Greetings, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call. The last caller, of course, he didn't come up with any solution. You run into people like that. Here's a problem, but what's your solution? No, stop, no, stop. Well, that's not a solution. But anyway, getting back to the elections, the issue that of getting younger people to vote is all the candidates are over 70 years old.
No.
Warren is 70.
But wait, not all the candidates. I mean, you're overgeneralizing.
Well, okay. I'm talking about all the major candidates are 70. I mean, Warren, Bernie, Biden, Trump. So could you imagine what's going on to some college students that are sitting around? Oh, I'm going to vote for Grandma Warren. Oh, I'm going to vote for my crazy Uncle Trump. I mean, there's like a two generations separating. And I think that's going to be an issue of getting younger people to vote.
Okay, so wait, if I can summarize your position, you're thinking that because a large part of the population is younger than the candidates, there will be a tendency not to support any of the candidates rationally. Which,
Well,
wait a minute. That's never been true, though. We've always had older candidates for president, pretty much.
Yeah, well, if McCain would have beaten Trump and became president, well, we would have had a president who died in office.
Yeah.
So, So, you know, it's, and also, retirement age is 65. And in England, when you turn 70, they take away your driver's license. So,
is that true? I don't know if that's true.
But anyway, the other issue about Bernie Sanders, no one wants to talk about the pink elephant in the roof. Are we ready for a Jewish president?
I think that's a non-issue, really.
Well, yes. Oh, people are going to say, does he take his marching orders from Tel Aviv?
I really don't think that fits Bernie.
Okay. Well, if he becomes president, does he when he swears oath, will it be on the Bible or the Torah?
Oh, come on, man. Let me say something that's important.
This is something they're going to bring up.
By raising this idea of anti-Semitism as a significant force in the electoral process, if you are successful in that argument, you create the climate of anti-Semitism. Yeah. I just don't see it. I just don't see it. I don't. First of all, I have no idea what Bernie believes, whether he ever has attempted, since he's been a grown-up, to become a part of a Jewish community. I know he's very critical of Israel. So it's a non-issue, really, as far as I can tell.
Well, now that I hear him mention that, you mentioned a few minutes ago that the prejudice runs deep.
Yeah.
In American society, and that somebody, for example, if Buttigieg were to be the nominee, would bring up his homosexuality. I think it's a safe bet that somebody is going to bring up the fact that Bernie is Jewish.
I honestly think that when Kennedy dealt directly with the question of Catholicism, that issue became much less significant. Now, is it possible that we'll see a rise in anti-Semitism? Well, hell, we've got an enormous right wing of activists who have always believed in a crazy Zionist conspiracy theory.
Yeah. Well, I think that
they're not going away.
I think that question has shifted polarity entirely. And so instead, I mean, they asked Kennedy, will you take your marching orders for the Pope? Now conservatives ask, well, are you going to follow the dictates of Jesus? If not, what's the matter with you?
Yeah,
see,
that's a good point.
We've flipped balls on that entirely. Let's go to the phones. Joel, you're next.
Hey, guys. Just one real quick aside for you guys when you're confronted with these extremely negative callers. There's a great scene in the popular show The Simpsons where there's a back and forth on a news show, and the newscaster asks the expert, well, sir, do you think it's time that we start cracking open each other's skulls and feasting on the delicious goo inside? And I think that would be a great question to ask those people, just to kind of derail the comment. May not be very professional, but it sure will be hilarious.
I'm not sure I understand.
Thanks,
it. Okay.
Well, he's saying that there's a tendency to fixate on matters that are completely inane and inconsequential. And he'd say it was entertaining. I've seen this episode of The Simpsons. The candidates talking back and forth about the
Simpsons guy.
Right. The ridiculous proposition of cracking open each other's skulls and feet. And they're talking about it like it was a real proposition. Well, I'm not sure the country is quite ready for, you know, that sort of thing.
Oh, I get it.
Yeah. Okay. that turned out to be a rather interesting conversation today.
Well, really? Oh, yeah. Look, we're out of time.
We are out of time.
Okay. Those of you who've been waiting in line, I apologize. We really are out of time. And there is a rule.
There is a rule. Yeah. Time does march on.
But next week, I'll be presenting some ideas about local stuff.
All right, that sounds good.
Yeah, and I apologize for being late today. I just blew it.
Is there anything you want to say in closing? How do you hope the next 18 to 24 months play out?
Well, I hope, I assume that the American people realize that they have a fascist as their leader, and they turn against the fascist, and he's knocked out. Now, what the Democrats and the Republicans are going to do after that, I have no idea. I really don't. I do think that my politics lean toward Bernie or Elizabeth Warren or anyone who will take on the establishment. Do I believe that's going to happen, and do I believe it's going to work? I don't know. How much do we have to be? How bad does it have to get? How far out from knowledge do we have to be to continue the kind of politics we have in our national elections? I don't know the answer.
We'll leave it there. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.
Alcohol from the staggering account of the Sermon on the Mount, which I don't pretend to understand at all. It's coming from the silence on the dark of the bay.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 8:59. Coming up next on Alternative Radio, it's part two of David Barsamian's conversation with historian and journalist Vijay Prashad, author of The Poor Nations, A Possible History of the Global South.
Homeless people, they're some of the most vulnerable and misunderstood folks in our communities. Season 3 of Local Folks Podcast, Helping the Homeless, is dedicated to telling the story of how a group of local people is working to provide needed services to folks who are experiencing homelessness. Episode 1 introduces the Corvallis Daytime Drop-In Center and the people at the center who give and receive help and support. You can find Local Folks at kboo.fm. Go to audio, podcasts, and click on Local Folks.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Native Artist and Storyteller Symposium on Saturday, October 26th from noon to 6 p.m. at the PSU Native American Student and Community Center in Portland. The Native Artist and Storyteller Symposium will feature artist talks and presentations by Native artists, a panel discussion, a community meal, an artist marketplace, and more. Again, that's the Native Artist and Storyteller Symposium on Saturday, October 26th from noon to 6 p.m. at the PSU Native American Student and Community Center, 710 Southwest Jackson Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage.